The first time the notification sound meant something good, I was 13 years old and sitting on the edge of my bed with my knees pulled to my chest, watching the screen light up like a small sun in the dark. 7 messages in under a minute. My name, spelled out across 4 of them. Cassidy said you were hilarious at lunch. Cassidy said you should come to her birthday. Cassidy wanted to know if I had the math notes from 3rd period. And also, what was I doing Saturday? I remember the exact weight of my phone in my hand. I remember the bedspread under me, a dark green with a loose thread I kept meaning to pull. I remember the sound, 3 soft ascending tones, like a question being answered, and I remember what it felt like to hear it in those first weeks. Like being led into a room you had been pressing your face against the glass of for months. That sound would follow me for the next 8 months. It would find me in the bathroom at school, in the back of my mother's car, in the dark at 2 in the morning when I should have been asleep but couldn't afford to be. By the end, when I heard those 3 tones, I would go very still, the way you go still when you are not sure yet whether what is coming is safety or the end of it. But I am getting ahead of myself. I should tell you what the group was, first. Not what it looked like from outside, which was just 7 girls who ate lunch together and wore each other's hoodies and finished each other's sentences in a way that looked like closeness. What it actually was, which took me considerably longer to understand, was an economy. Everyone inside it was always trading something. Proximity for loyalty, information for access, silence for continued membership. Cassidy ran the exchange rate. She didn't announce this. She didn't have to. You just noticed, after a while, that every social decision that touched any of us somehow required her awareness first. That when she smiled at something you said, the other 5 relaxed by visible degrees. That when she went quiet, the room temperature dropped. I noticed this. I want to be clear that I noticed it early. I was the kind of girl who noticed things, who cataloged the slight pause before a compliment, the way someone's eyes moved before they laughed at you rather than with you. My mother used to say I was too watchful for my own good. She meant it as a warning. I took it as a point of pride. What I did not notice, or more accurately what I noticed and chose to reframe, was that Cassidy's particular attention to me was not random. I was new. I had transferred in October, 6 weeks into the school year, and the particular loneliness of being new at 13, not young enough to attach with the unconscious ease of childhood, not old enough to have the vocabulary for what you are actually feeling, was the specific kind of loneliness that makes you receptive. I was not desperate, I told myself. I was just open. This was the first lie. There are several more. The group chat was called something innocuous that I won't repeat here, and for the first month it was genuinely ordinary. Memes, homework questions, the low-stakes drama of who had said what in PE. Then one evening in November, a screenshot appeared. It was a private conversation between a girl named Priya and someone outside our group. In it, Priya had described Cassidy as fake. The word she actually used was performative, which at 13 was either impressively precise or self-consciously sophisticated, and even then I registered the difference. What I remember more clearly is that the chat went silent for 4 full minutes after the screenshot landed. Then Cassidy typed, "Well," and that was it, just that, and we all understood. Priya was not removed from the chat. That would have been too direct, too easily described to a teacher or a parent. What happened instead was more elegant and more brutal. She was simply responded to less. One-word answers, delayed reactions, the occasional message left on read with a receipt Priya could see. It was a volume dial, not a light switch, and it was turned down so gradually that Priya kept second-guessing whether anything was even happening. I watched this. I told myself I was not participating. I was simply not intervening, which is a different thing. This is the version I held on to for longer than I should have. By January, the social architecture had become clear enough that I could map it, if I had wanted to. Cassidy at the center. The 2 girls closest to her, who had been there longest, and whose positions were most secure, who therefore had the least incentive to be kind. The 3 of us in the outer ring, who had more recent membership and more to lose. And then Priya, who had moved from inside to something more like adjacent, which is its own particular cruelty because adjacent still looks like belonging from the outside, and therefore offers no legitimate complaint. I stayed because leaving would have cost me my entire social world 6 months before high school placement. This is not metaphor. The school fed directly into one of two high schools based on a combination of grades and counselor recommendation, and social standing informed the latter in ways no one admitted officially, but everyone understood practically. I had already started over once. I was not willing to do it again. When I explain this to people now, they understand it or they don't, and the ones who don't usually never had to calculate the real cost of social erasure at 14, which is a kind of luck they probably don't even know they have. So I stayed. And I told myself that staying passive was different from participating. I told myself that I wasn't doing anything, which is how it was still technically true. In February, Cassidy sent me a private message, not in the group chat, a separate conversation, just us. She said she'd noticed I was thoughtful, that I paid attention in a way most people didn't. She asked if I'd seen the messages Priya had been sending another girl in our year, complaints apparently about Cassidy, about all of us. I said I hadn't seen them. She said she thought I might have, because I noticed things. I want you to understand the precision of what was happening here. She was not asking me to do anything yet. She was simply establishing that she knew something about me, that I was observant, that I was quiet about what I observed, and she was reflecting that back to me, wrapped in what felt exactly like being seen. Cassidy had a gift for this. She could make attention feel like intimacy. She could make being chosen feel like being understood. I have met two other people in my adult life who could do this, and they were both doing something that required that skill. I told her I'd keep an eye out. It was the most expensive sentence I ever said. In March, a girl named Devora made a comment in the group chat that was meant as a joke but landed wrong. The kind of thing that reads as sharp on a screen without the buffer of tone or expression. Cassidy screenshot it. She sent it to me privately. She asked what I thought. I said I thought Devora hadn't meant it badly. Cassidy said, "You know what's interesting? She said almost the same thing about Priya. That Priya didn't mean it badly. She didn't ask me to do anything with this. She was just noting a pattern." She left the conversation there, open, and I sat with it for 2 days. Then I sent Cassidy a screenshot. It was a message Devora had sent me in a separate chat, complaining about how Cassidy had been cold to her lately. I sent it because I thought, and this is the part that still costs me something to say out loud, I thought it would help. I thought if Cassidy understood what Devora was feeling, she would ease off, and things would settle, and I would have been useful. I thought I was solving something. I don't believe I am a dishonest person, but I am not sure I believed any of that when I was doing it. I think I sent it because the conversation with Cassidy had made the calculus clear enough that I could feel where my membership stood. I think I sent it because I wanted to stay inside the room, and I had finally found something I was willing to trade. Devora's position in the group shifted within a week. Not dramatically. Just that particular dial. Turned. I did not send another screenshot after that. I want that on record, even knowing what record means and who is keeping it. But I also stopped defending the girls Cassidy turned the volume down on. I stopped saying she didn't mean it and started saying nothing, and I learned that nothing was its own form of contribution. By April, three girls were in some version of the outer space that Priya had first occupied. I had remained where I was. The notification sound still meant something good, most of the time. The green bedspread was still on my bed. I am a school counselor now. I want you to know that, because I think it matters. I have sat across from 14-year-old girls in various states of erosion, and I have said the right things about speaking up, about trusted adults, about how the group is not worth it. I believe what I say. I also know what the group felt like from the inside, the specific gravity of it, the real cost of resistance, the way intelligent girls can construct perfectly reasonable explanations for behavior they would not be able to defend to the version of themselves they started out as. Here is what I want you to sit with. If you are a parent, if you are a teacher, if you are someone who has ever said, "Why didn't she just leave?" or "Why didn't she just tell someone?" She didn't leave because leaving had a price she could calculate to the decimal. She didn't tell someone because the social code inside that group defined silence as loyalty and disclosure as the deeper betrayal. She stayed because she was not being hurt. Exactly. Not in ways that left evidence. Not in ways she could explain without sounding like she was describing the temperature of a room. She was managing a set of incentives that adults built and handed to children and then walked away from. And if she crossed a line she swore she never would, if she found herself doing something small and deniable and useful that cost someone else something she wasn't willing to pay herself, she did it because the architecture made it rational, not because she was cruel, because she was calculating. And because nobody who was watching ever named what the architecture was. I hear those three tones sometimes. Different phone, different app, means nothing now. My hands remember before my mind does. They go still. Ask yourself what you would have traded. Ask yourself what you have already traded, in rooms with different names. And then ask yourself what you think you're teaching the children who are watching you do it.